Begin the current Daf Masechtas Sayta Daf Zayin. Begin on the second line from the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous Mishnayos, discussing what happens with the Suffolk Sayta. That is again, as we explained, if a husband suspects his wife regarding being unfaithful with another man, so he does kinu, he warns her, then there's stira, which she's secluded with that man, and there's no edei tumah, no one saw if she was defiled or not. So then she becomes the Suffolk Saita, where the procedure is as our Mishnah continues. Ketzad Aisalah, so what do you do with this woman now who has gone through Kinui and Stira? And we're not sure if she was unfaithful or not. So Malich Lebezdin Sheba Isay Makim. So the husband brings his wife to the court, the Jewish court, in that place where they live. Umaisun Leishne Tamid Chacham. Now, that court from where he lives, give him two Talmudic scholars. Because maybe the husband will have relations with his wife on the road, and that's referring to because the drinking of the Mei Saita has to be in Yerushalayim by the Bez Nagola, by the great court, as the Mishnah later on is going to explain. And therefore, since they're going to have this long journey getting to Yerushalayim, maybe on the road he's going to want to have relations with his wife, which he's forbidden to already as a Suffolk Saita, so therefore the courts would give along with him to Talmid Chacham. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Aimer, he says, no, Baila Nemen Aleh, says the husband is believed regarding his wife that he's not going to have relations with her, and therefore they don't have to send along the two Talmid Chacham for the journey that he's taking now, going up to Yerushalayim, to the Bez Nagodl, to the great court of the Sanhedrin of 71. Now, the Gemara makes an inference that what we saw from the opinion of the Tanakhama was that there was the woman, the Suffolk Saita, and there's the husband, and then there's the two Talmid Chacham that they're sending along with them. So says the Gemara, Trei Ve'ihu. Sounds like there has to be two other people and him. Hatlasa. So that's for a total of three. Says the Gemara, Le Masayei L'Rav. Let's say this supports the halach of Rav. To Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, he said, Lo Yishana, we didn't learn this, that what we learned in the Mishnah Masechtas Kedushin, that a woman is allowed to have what's called Yichud, to be secluded with two men. One man is forbidden, that's the halach of Yichud, because of what it might lead to. But the Mishnah Masechet Kedushin says she could be secluded with two men. And that Rav qualified and said, we didn't learn that halacha, Ela Be'ir, only in the city, in the populated area. Of Bederech Ad Ikash Leisha. But if they're on the road, somewhere out far away from the city, then that it has to be three men and one woman to be allowed. And the reason being is because Shema, because if, let's say, there's only two men and one woman, maybe it's Tarach Echad Mehen L'Nekava. I mean, one of the men is going to have to relieve himself. V'nim, and he's going to have to go away to a distance so that he can go ahead and relieve himself. V'nim Tze'echad Mehen Misyachad Me'erva. And that's going to cause that the remaining man is going to be secluded with that woman, with the Erva, which is forbidden because the Halacha of Yichud, what it could lead to. So the Gemara says, seemingly that's the Halacha of our Mishnah. That since both the Shlichei Bezdin, the Talmid Chacham, and the husband are both forbidden to this woman, them because she's a married woman, and him because she's the Suffolk Saita, who he's forbidden to have relations with her now until it's verified through the Mei Saita, was she unfaithful or not. So that it's not enough to have just two people, because maybe either the husband or the Shliach Bezdin is going to have to go out and relieve himself, and then the other one is going to be secluded with the woman, which is forbidden to them. So that the Gemara says, no, it's not a riot to the Halach of Rav. Because here I can tell you the reason why that two more people are sent along is not to create the element of getting by the problem of Yichud, but rather it's just that we should have witnesses, two more people, to say testimony that if along the journey the husband goes and has beer with his wife, that they can tell the Bez Nagod, they'll say, don't give her the Meisaita because it's not going to work. It only works if the husband didn't have relations with his wife after she became a Suffolk Saita before drinking from the Meisaita, from the drink that's given in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara makes, however, another inference. Talmid Chacham in. Sounds like that the two messengers that the court send along with them have to be Talmudic scholars. But Kuli Amaloi, but general, regular people, they're not valid to be sent along. So So the Gemara says, let's say that supports a different halach of Rav, also in the same context of Yichud. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, he says, Lo Yishana, we didn't learn that a woman could be miyachid, could be secluded with two men, Ela Kesherin, only upstanding men, Avu Perutzen, but if they're immoral, low base type of people, then even 10 men would be forbidden to be secluded with one woman. And Maisahaya actually was such an incident. V'yitzi'uhu asara, 10 men took out a married woman out of the city, b'mita, in a bed, meaning presuming and giving the appearance as if she's dead, because they wanted to do inappropriate things with her. So you see 10 men, although you would think generally the halach of yichud is avoided by having another man, where that would cause resistance for the person to do something inappropriate. When they're inappropriate people, they'll do it even with 10 people. So therefore, seemingly that's being supported by the halach of our Mishnah, where they're trying to avoid one of the people doing something inappropriate with this woman. That had to be tamid the chachamim, because if they're not, then even 3 people wouldn't help. And I think Mar says, no, that's not necessarily the point that the Mishnah is illustrating. Rather, here the reason why it had to be tamid the chachamim was the yadi lasrube. It was for their Torah knowledge, was that they could warn the husband and tell him, look, we know the Torah. And the Torah tells us that it's only when the husband is cleansed himself from sin that the ward is going to check the wife. In other words, but if you go ahead and you have relations with your wife now along the journey, then you're not cleansed from sin because you're not allowed to have with that. And then actually the ward is not going to inspect your wife. So that's why we need Tamid HaChacham to tell him clearly the halacha to avoid him transgressing that problem, because then the whole Meisaita, the whole warders of the Saita are not going to work. Now, Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Baila V'chulu, Rabbi Yehuda argued in Tanakama. He says, you don't need these 2 messengers because the husband is believed regarding his wife. Now, Tanya Lidna Braisa that elaborates on this opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer says, Baila Neman, the husband is believed regarding his wife, and that he doesn't have to have these 2 witnesses sent along with him to make sure that he's not going to, or if he does, to testify that he had beer with his wife. Mikal V'chemer, from the following logic, where Uman Nida Shibikar is, because if regarding a wife, that half the month, she's menstruating, she has Alocha V'nida, where the punishment is actually a penalty of Karis, which is a severe death penalty from the hands of heaven, and yet by Laneman Allah, we don't say half the month, oh, suddenly a husband needs 2 people to watch him to make sure he's not violating, and he's actually allowed to have Yich, allowed to be secluded with his wife, that's a Nida, even though there's a punishment of Karis. So regarding a suspected adulterous wife, where for the husband to have relations with her now, before it's verified, is just a negative prohibition. It's not that with one a punishment of Karis, whereas this is learned out in the first paragraph of Sechus Yivamis of Yod Aleph and Beis, where it talks about Lo Yuchel Ba'ala Rishon, when it talks about the Parsha Machzik Rishasein, it says seemingly extra words of Achri Asher Hutama, after that she's been defiled, where the Gemara learns up to say that, what are we talking about, of being nitma, of being defiled, it's a reference to a saita, a wife that was nistra, that was secluded, that puts a negative prohibition on the husband having relations. So if it's just a negative prohibition, loy kol shekein, isn't it a kavol chaymer to say that if he's believed regarding his wife, when she's an issacharis, for sure he's believed regarding his wife, when all it is achar asha tama, where lo yuchel baila, that the husband can't have relations, is just a negative prohibition. Now that the Braisa says, but Rabbanon hold that actually he on the senes. To the contrary, actually the logic that you were using to prove your opinion, Rabbi Yehuda, is actually the reasoning that we use to say that he needs to have witnesses with his suffix saita wife, because needed the karis. You're right, needed. That's a punishment of karis. So chamirale, it's a pretty severe iser, and therefore he's not going to have beer with her because he knows it's like touching barbed wire. This is pretty severe stuff. So therefore, Mehemen, that's why he's believed to go that with his wife in general when she's in Nida. But Saita de la, but the wife that's just a Saita is just a negative prohibition. People don't view it as such a severe thing, and therefore Mehemen actually contrarily, he's not going to be believed. And that's why the Rabbanan say we have to send along 2 Tamid Chachamim along with him on his journey up to Yerushalayim. Now, the Gemara asks on this Braisa, that Rabbi Yehuda mekavol chama maisala, we brought in this braisa that Rabbi Yehuda, his opinion why you don't need to have 2 other people with him is because of mekavol chama, as we learned from Nida. So the Gemara asks, is that really where he knows his opinion from? But Rabbi Yehuda mikroa maisala, but as we see in the following braisa, Rabbi Yehuda learns it out from sukkim, not from the logic of kavol chama. The time like learn the braisa. The pasuk by Midbar says, v'hevi ha'ish es ishto el ha'kayin, that the man will bring his wife to the kayin, again for the whole saita procedures. So on that, says the Braisa, min ha'tayra, this is the Tanakama, the first opinion. Min ha'tayra ha'ish mevi es ishte, as we see in the Pasuk, biblically, the husband is the one who he himself brings his wife. But the sages said, we have to send along with him two Talmudic scholars. Maybe he's going to have a cohabitation with his wife on the road, and therefore we need them there to be able to verify if he did or he didn't. Now, Rabbi Yossi Aimer, he argues, says, no, the husband is believed from a Kavol Chaimer. Umani the Shibikaris, because if by the a menstruating wife, which is a penalty of karas, by lenemenelo, a husband is believed to be secluded with his wife, society she belav lekoshkin, society with just a negative prohibition, isn't a koshkin that he's believed? Amar loy, so they said to him, loy, no, which this is a different refutation. In the first brisa, when Rabbi Yehuda said this kavol chaimer, so they answered in one approach. Here they say a different approach to refute that kavol chaimer. They say no, because imamar to benida, if he'll say that by nida he's believed, the reason is shekein yesh lo heter, because there's going to be a time when she's going to be permitted when she goes to the mikveh and she purifies herself. And therefore, his desire is not so overpowering, because he knows, I'll wait a little bit longer, my wife will be permitted to me. But tamer b'seita she'en lo heter. But to the contrary, how can you say that he's believed regarding his wife that's a seita, who could be is never going to be permitted ever again? If it turns out that she was defiled and she had be with another man, she's asa for him forever. And therefore, actually, his desires are chasing and pushing him to actually have bia with his wife. And therefore, that's what the Rabbanan said, that no, by the nida, yes, he's believed, even though it's cursed, but here by saita, yitzur takfa, he's not believed. Moreover, va'ima, like it says the pasuk in Mishlei, mayim ginuvim yim taku v'goymer, that the stolen waters are sweet, as the pasuk concludes, v'lechem sisar miyinam, and the hidden bread is tasty, where in other words, something that's forbidden to him, is there's more of a desire and a push. So by the wife, she'll be permitted, it's just temporarily. So it's not so much of a desire, but something which might be forbidden forever, and which is what his saita wife might be, then actually he might be chasing that more, and therefore there, yes, we have to send along to aid him, and he's not believed. Now, Rabbi Huda Aimer, third opinion mentioned, he says, min ha-toyra ha-ish mevias ishto elakayin. Biblically is the source that a husband brings his wife to the kohen by himself. Shnemek says in the pasuk, behavi ish es ishtay, that the man brings his wife. So therefore the Gemara's question is, how in the first brisa did we say Rabbi Huda's opinion that only the husband brings the wife is based on a kavol chaimer from Nida, which was Rabbi Yossi espoused that same opinion in the second brisa. But Rabbi Huda in the second brisa says you know it from the pasuk, not from a kavol chaimer. So on that, the Gemara answers, Amalahu Kavachime Bereisha. You're right, like the first Brisa had quoted, he first answered his opinion based on the Kavachime. But then Uprachua, but then they refuted his Kavachime, as we said, that no, because actually Yesh Laheter, which as we quoted in the second Brisa, which is what they responded to Rabbi Yossi, which was what Rabbi Yehuda had held in the first Brisa, and said that no, by the Nida he's believed because there's going to be permitted time. That's why by Nida he's believed, but by Saita, where she might never be believed, might never be permitted, there is not going to be believed. So Vahada Amalukru, that's when the second Brisa, he brought that from them a source for his opinion from a pasuk because the Kavol Chaimer was refuted. Now the Gemara ends up this discussion by asking, but in the second Brisa we had three opinions, Tanakama, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Huda. Problem is, Rabbi Huda and the Tanakama, they're essentially the same thing in the Brisa that opened up the second Brisa with the Tanakama saying, behavior is sisishtai, the husband brings the wife himself. And then Rabbi Huda at the end says, which what we said he knows from the pasuk is v'hevi yeshes eseshtai. So what's the difference? So the Gemara says ikibeinayu aval amru. The difference between them is what the Chachamim, the Tanakama said, that although yes, that's what the pasuk says, but the sages said that we should send along to aid him because he's not believed. And on that, Rabbi Huda disagrees and he holds that we're not machmer in that sense, and we stay with the biblical law because he is believed, and we remain with this halacha that it's the husband himself who takes the journey with his wife to bring her to drink the Meisaita in Yerushalayim. Now the Gemara continues to the next Mishnah, again continuing on the procedures and the procession of what's done with the Suffolk Saita. So the Mishnah says, Hoyimalan Isala Bezna Godol Shei BeYerushalayim. So they would bring her up to the big court of 71 judges, which was the largest courts in the Jewish court system that was in Yerushalayim. Uma'ayman Alaha. Now they would intimidate her to have her admit her guilt, kederach shema'aymin al eidin nefasha, just like they intimidate when there's witnesses in the capital case regarding killing someone, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that they would tell the witnesses in a capital court case that you should just know that monetary law is not the same as regarding killing somebody, and so on and so forth. That's the same thing they would do over here. Vaymala, and they would tell her, look, Piti, my daughter, harba yayin oisa. Look, there's a lot of things that wine can make a person do. Harba schleika is a lot that laughter can make a person do. Harba yaldas oisa is a lot that childish things can make a person do. And it causes youth to do things that will really wreck their lives. Now, essentially what they were telling her was that maybe it's true what the rumors are about you, and therefore don't make this happen, that you do realize what's going to happen when you're going to drink these waters and you're going to, your stomach's going to bloat and your thighs are going to collapse and your eyes are going to bulge out. And therefore they were trying to get her to understand that we understand what you did. It makes sense that for all the things that possibly you have done caused you to do this heinous act. There's a lot that bad neighbors can make a person do because A, bad neighbors, they know how to seduce you, and moreover, they're always around. Asi l'shmoi ha'gadol shenechtev b'kedusha. Do this for the sake of Hashem's great name that was written in sanctity, or like some Girsoyas actually have as altas. I mean, don't do this to Hashem's great name. Shlo yimach ha'alamayim, that it shouldn't be dissolved in the water, because that's part of the process of the Safek Sayyid, to taking Hashem's name and letting it dissolve in that water, and then she drinks. Now, actually, they would tell her certain things that it's not appropriate for her. She wasn't. It's not really fitting for her to have to be able to hear these things. Neither he, not her or her whole entire father's family. In other words, because they would tell her about the great tzaddikim, the righteous people that also admitted to certain things they had done wrong. And truthfully, she's not on that level to be compared to the righteous, but we're doing it so that she should be able to admit regarding things she had done wrong, whereas we find that even Yehuda from the tribes and the Shvatim admitted to his guilt. So we're trying to say, don't worry. Even the big righteous people admitted to their guilt. Admit what you had done wrong. Now, Im Amr, if after all this she says, Tameyane, okay, I admit, I was defiled, I was Mezana. So then, Sheveres Ksubasa, she writes a Shaver, which is a receipt, on her Ksuba. Meaning she writes to her husband, I was Mizana, I lost my ksuba, and she writes in that receipt, she signed, she gives it to her husband, so that at a later point in time, she shouldn't come and say, look, I have a ksuba, I have this document which say you owe me money. She writes the receipt, the yaitzis, and she leaves the marriage. Now, she doesn't get killed, because obviously, being killed for having a relation as a ashes ish is only if she was warned by witnesses during the time when she was about to commit. There's no sin here, actually, there were no witnesses. Actually, she was just secluded. So she doesn't get her ksuba and she leaves. Now, v'im amr t'mea tahirani, but if she still stands firm and she says, no, I'm tar, I didn't do anything. Samalan oisalish ahamizach. So they would take her up to the eastern gate. Now, that was the most outermost gate when one was entering the Harabais, the Temple Mount, which on the top of that was built, the Beis HaMikdash, which was al pesach shar nikoner, which faced the opening of the nikoner gate. Because actually, after they were by the shar mizrach, they would go up, further up to the Shara Nikoner, to the Nikoner gate, which was also on the eastern side, which was the uppermost gate in the wall between the Ezra's Yisrael, which was one courtyard, to the Ezra's Nashim, which was one of the other courtyards. Now, the Shara Nikoner, why was it called Nikoner gate, was because there was a great person that brought copper gates from Alexandria of Egypt, and he brought it to that gate, and there were many miracles that happened, as the Gemara says, Meseches Yomim of Lamed Zayin Mabez, in bringing those gates, and therefore they were called by his name. So they would bring her first to the Shar Mizrach, and then they would bring her to the Shar Nikoner. And the reason why they would bring her to Shar Nikoner was Shasham Mashken Es HaSaitis. That was where they would make the Saita drink that water, which was because it has to be, as the Pasuk says, Lefnei Hashem, which that's front of Hashem, in other words, where the Beis HaMikdash is. Now, the reason was that, but it's not appropriate for her to be drinking and having this whole procedure happen, which is going to die in the Beis HaMikdash. So the reason why it was by Shar Nikoner was because actually that gate of the courtyard of the Azar was not sanctified with the sanctity like the other gates of the Beis HaMikdash of the Azar itself. Rather, the whole ear space of that gate was considered chayil, as the area outside. And the reason for this is because the person that had saras had to stick his hands into the azara so that they could be able to throw the blood of the carbon asham on his behindness, meaning on his thumbs of his hand and his feet. Now, the problem with that is that someone like a Metzaira is considered Mechusse Kippurim. He's lacking atonement until the whole services of his Karbanas are done, who, if they come into the Azara, get Karas. So what they did was that they didn't sanctify the Nikonor gate so that he could stand there in the area of that gate. And because the problem is, because if the Kohen would take from the blood of the Ashram and throw it outside of the Azara, then it would actually become puzzle, what's called of Yaitse, when it leaves the area that it's allowed to be. So therefore, he had to stick his hands into the ear space of the Azara, but his whole body was in an area that was allowed. And although he's sticking his thumbs into the Azara itself, where he's not allowed to enter, that, as the Gemara there learns in Masechtas Zvachim, is that the Torah gave a special dispensation that a Bia B'Miktzis, a partial entry into the Azara was allowed for the Mitzayra. So that's where they would give the Saita to drink the May Saita. And that was also the area by the Shar, in the Shar Nikonor, in that gate, Umitarnas Ayeldus, they would purify the woman that gave birth, which the Gemara in the next Tav is going to explain exactly what that is. Umitarnas Amitzaran, as we just mentioned before, that's also a place where they would purify the Mitzayra by throwing the blood on his thumbs from his Karban Asham. Now, so they would bring her there. The Kayin Eichiz Bibigdeha. Now, the Kayin would grab her garment near her neck area and would pull. Now, im nikru, if her garment would tear, so nikru would tear, and that's not a concern. The im nifrumu, and if it would tear to tiny pieces, then it would totally tear all apart, that's also okay. But the idea is, atru magales liba, until he reveals her chest area, which the Gemara on the next Avos will learn exactly from Sukkim how we know that that's required. And v'seiser sarah, and he would also let down her hair, meaning if her hair was braided, he would let the hair down, which again, the Gemara will also bring the source for that, so he would expose her chest area and let her hair down. Now, Rabbi Huda, he says, if her chest area was beautiful, then he wouldn't reveal that area. And v'mhoye sarah, no, if she had beautiful hair, he wouldn't let her hair down from the braid. Now the Mishnah continues, if she was wearing white clothing, then they would first put her on black clothing and then do that procedure. Now, if she was wearing golden ornaments, or as we continue on, Tamad Beis, Vekatliyos, chokers, which was a type of ornament that was like a semicircle, which was open, and with that it would be used as a clasp to hold up her garment, and it would surround the neck from the sides. So, or if Nizam, if she was wearing a nose rings or a tabois or regular rings, so mavir memeno kadela nav, they would remove all her jewelry, so again that she should be despised and be repulsive. The achakach, then after that they had torn her top of her shirt, then maybe chevel hamitzri, then they would bring this, either it means an Egyptian rope, but Rashi says it was from the word mitzri is actually from the word tsurei dekel. It would be made from the fibers of a palm tree, which was this that grows on the bottom of the palm tree, which wraps itself around that. They would make rope out of that, and they would be b'kosher l'malam edadeha. They would tie her garment above her breast area so that her garment that was torn at the top shouldn't fall down. So they would take it and take that rope and tie it above her breast. V'chol right to liris, but liris, whoever wants to see this whole proceeding could come and see. Chutz ma'avadeh b'shif chayseha, except for her male and female servants. M'mnei sheliba gaspen, because she prides herself over her servants. Now, when someone sees their family members, then they become strong-minded, and she won't be afraid, and she won't want to admit her guilt in front of them. Now, the whole point of this procedure is we want her to admit, because we don't want to desecrate and dissolve Hashem's holy name in the water, so we don't want those people around, which will prevent her from admitting her guilt. Now the Mishnah concludes, V'chala nashim mutaris l'raisa. Now all women are permitted to see her in this state of disgrace, which the Gemara will later ask. The Reish already said, whoever wants to see, you could see, which sounds like even men. And here it says, every woman that wants to see, could see. Shem, like it says, a pasuk in Yecheskel, V'nivasru chal hanashim, that all women should take the rebuke, and that they won't do like you had done with your lewdness, with your inappropriateness in this. Again, even if she's tahar, as Rashi says elsewhere, the fact that she put herself in such a situation that there is this suspicion is already inappropriate, to let every woman learn to keep the appropriate level of tznius. Now the Gemara asks, regarding the opening of the Mishnah Menon Amili, from where do we know this idea that we need the Bezna Gadol, the Supreme Jewish Court, where, although, yes, we know that the drinking of the Saita waters has to be in Yerushalayim, as the Pasuk says, Vehemet HaKoyin Es Ishla Bnei Hashem, that the Koyin places her in front of Hashem, which means to say, in front of the Beis HaMikdash. But who said that you need to have the great court of 71 judges? Who said it's not enough with one of the two lower courts of 23, where there was one court of 23 by the entryway of the Har HaBayis of the Temple Mount, and there was another one by the opening of the Azara, as the Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin? So how do we know it has to be the great Bezna Gadol? So Amar B'chi Bargam, the Amar B'yisi Reb Chanina, Asya Torah, Torah, learned it out from Gzeir Shavah, from the word of Torah. Ksiv Hacha, here it says in the parashah of Saita in Bamidbar, V'asa Laha Koyin Es Kol HaTorah, that the Koyin does for all the whole entire law. It used the word Torah. Ksiv Hasim, it says over there in Pasuk in Devarim, Al-Pi HaTorah Asher Yerucha, based on the Torah that he has taught you. Now, Malahalan, just like over there in that Pasuk, which is in the parashah of what's called Zakin Mamre, regarding an elder that defies the judgment and the court ruling of the Bezdin. Now, that's Toma specifically, that halacha of Zakin Mamre, what happens over there is B'shivim V'echad, only by the great court of 71, because as the Pasuk says in Devarim Yud Zayin, it says, Min HaMakom Ahu, from that place, which is the place, which is the Lishkas HaGazes, which was the place where the great court would be, and that is because actually if this person rebels against the court's ruling, the Zakin Mamre, it's not exactly in that place of the Lishkas HaGazes, of the Chamber of Hewn Stone, which is where the Sanhedrin HaGadol was, then actually the halachas of Zakin Mamre wouldn't apply with what how he's punished. So we see that that's where it says Torah refers to the Bezna Gadol of 71. So Avkan B'Shivim Echad, here also by the Seder, where he used the word Torah, it refers to being done by the Bezna Gadol of 71. Now the Mishnah said to Ma'ayman Alav Achulu, that we intimidate her, we try to get her to admit her guilt. We don't want her to drink, to make this Seder waters of erasing Hashem's name and coming to need that to come on. Now that Ramindu, the Gemara asks, contradictory from the following Braisa. Because the Brisa says, "Kederech shema'ayim nalel shalay tishta," just like we intimidate her not to drink, but kach ma'ayim nalel shalay tishta, we see, seemingly contradictory, that we also intimidate her to drink the waters. Ayim la, we tell her, look, biti, my daughter, imbar lacha hadavar shetahara'at, if it's so clear to you that you really are pure, that you never did anything wrong, so imdial bariach, stand your ground on what you're clear on, that you're really naki, that you're really clean. Vishasi, and therefore drink the waters. Don't be afraid, because this bitter waters are only compared to like a dry potion, a dry salve, which is put on raw skin. And that is, if there's a wound over there, something wrong over there, oh, then it goes down and it burns up everything over there. It takes care of the problem. If there's no wound, then it doesn't do anything. In other words, don't be afraid. If you didn't do anything, nothing bad is going to happen to you. So we see seemingly from this Brisa that we intimidate her to drink, our Mishnah, and so to the beginning of that Brisa makes it sound like we intimidate her not to drink. So the Gemara says, Loi Kasha, it's not a difficulty. Kan Koidim Shenimchakom Megillah, our Mishnah, in the beginning of the Brisa was talking about where the scroll with Hashem's name wasn't yet dissolved and erased in that water. So we don't want that to happen, so we intimidate her not to drink. We try to get her to admit her guilt. Here the Bryce is talking about that after it was already erased, the water's already ready. So then we tell her words of consolation that she should drink. And don't worry, if you are clean, we want you to be permitted to your husband. We don't want her to be afraid of the water. And she's going to say, oh, I'm tummy, because she's going to say, okay, you know, and truthfully, maybe she's really tar. And because she's so afraid of the water and she admits I'm tummy, so then she's going to be spreading rumors about herself, about her children. So therefore, if it's already erased, we want her to go through with it, because if she's really tahar, let her at least get the benefits of at least proving her innocence. Now the Mishnah said, also we tell her certain things that she's not really fit to have such great things said to her, but we just want her to admit, so we tell her these things. So Tanban, we learn the Braisa that we tell her, Divarm Shel HaGadah, certain agadic teachings, umaisim she'iru b'ksuv marishayim, and certain incidents that happen in the earlier writings, meaning regarding things that are written in the Torah that happened in the earlier days. So Kogain, for example, from the Haggadah, from the agadic teachings that we tell her, is like a pasuk in Eve that says, ashachacham yagidu, that which the sages tell, in other words, that they admit regarding their sins, v'loi chichad, chichadu, and that is that they did not hold back their sins, ma'avaisam, from telling this to their fathers. Now, who are they? Who are these great tzaddikim that they admitted their guilt and they didn't hold back from telling their father what they had done wrong? Was Yehuda. We find by Yehuda from the Shvatim, he admitted his guilt and he wasn't embarrassed, which was regarding the incident with Tamar, where although he had the meisah nus with her, and he thought it was from someone else, and therefore he was going to kill her, and when he found out it was him, he said, Sadka b'men, he admitted his guilt. Now, maha yusayfa, what was his end? Nachal chai oil mabo, he inherited the world to come. So to Reuven haydibalei boish, his brother from the Shvatim, he also admitted, and he wasn't embarrassed, which is regarding the incident with Bilhah, which he took the bed and he placed it in his mother's tent from where his father had put it, where actually the way it's written, and as some actually interpret it, that he was Mizana with Bilhah. No, he wasn't embarrassed, and they admitted his guilt. Samaha Yosef, what was his end? Nochel Chayim Abba, he inherited the world to come. Now, Umaschar, and then what's their reward? Which the Gemara quickly asked, Maschar, and what's their reward? Kedekamini, you just said what their reward is, that they inherit the world to come. El Maschar and Bo'il Mazeh, rather, what's their reward even in this world? That's where the next pasuk in Eve says, Lehem levadam nitna ha'aretz. For them alone was the land given. In other words, they merited certain things in Eretz Yisrael more than the rest, where Yehuda merited to be the royalty of Eretz Yisrael, Malchus, as the Tesefta says in Sefta's Brachas, where that's what Malchus based on, it comes from Shebet Yehuda. And Reuven also took the first portion in Eretz Yisrael in Eva HaYarden in Transjordan. And as the pasuk ends, v'lo over zar b'teichem, that no foreigner will enter between them, where, as Rashi brings from Reb Tanchuma, who expounds that when is it that no foreigner came between Yehuda and Reuven, was when Moshe Rabbeinu came to bench them. By the brachas, it says Yichi Reuven, and it says V'zeis Yehuda, that no other person came between them. They're eternally connected for their brave act of admitting their guilt and not being ashamed. And therefore, that's what they were trying to tell her. Say, look, Yehuda and Reuven, they admitted their guilt. Admit your guilt, which actually both of them are in reference to having Maisa's nose, we're telling her also, admit your guilt. Now, the Gemara wonders, Bishlem b'Yehuda ashkechan da'oidit. Very well that we know that by Yehuda, we find that he admitted his guilt. So like it says, a pasuk in Bereishis. It says, Vayaka Yehuda. Yehuda recognized the signs that Tamar was saying, whoever it was that has these things, which she didn't want to say to embarrass Yehuda, and she was willing to go to her death. And Yehuda recognized that it was really him that had that Maisa's nose with his daughter-in-law Tamar. V'yemer tzadka mimen, he says, oh, she's right, it was from me. So we find this incident. El Reuven menolim da'id, but where do we find a reference to Reuven admitting his guilt? How do we know that he admitted what he had done? So the Gemara says, the Amr b'shmo banachmein Amr b'yechanan. Ma'edich siv, what does it mean the pasuk in Devarim? And this was by the brachas that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to the Shvatim. It says, Yechi Reuven va'al yamos. Reuven lives and not die. And then the next pasuk says, V'zois Yehuda, and this is for Yehuda. Now, what's interesting is that we don't find by any of the brachas of the tribes that should start off with the word V'zois, and this, except for Yehuda. So what's and this, as if it's continuing something from the fact of Yechi Reuven Bal Yomais? So that explains Rabbi Yechanan. Kol Aysen Shanim Shal Yisrael Bamidbar, all the years that the Jewish people were in the desert, which for 40 years, Hayat Smaisiv Shal Yehuda Megulgalim Ba'aran, the bones of Yehuda, of the great head of the tribe, his bones were rolling around in the coffin, in the casket, where all the bones of the Shvatim were brought up from Egypt. They died there in Egypt, but it was brought up. And that's what Yosef told his brothers, that you should bring up my bones with you, meaning because all the bones of the Shvatim were taken up to Eretz Yisrael. Now, their bodies were intact, although they were dead for many years. Now, but Yehuda, his limbs were detached, and they were rolling around in the coffin. Now, the reason being is because he put himself into a state of excommunication as a way of guaranteeing to his father that he's going to bring back Binyamin. Where he said, V'chatasi l'chal kal yam, I'll be in a state of sin all my days, which means even for the world to come. Now, actually, from here, the Gemara Masechtas Makkos learns out that, although he actually did bring back Binyamin, but that a nidu of a chacham, even by a condition, could come true. So therefore, he was in a state of nidu. Until Moshe Rabbeinu came and he beseeched mercy on Yehuda. He said in front of Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Master of the world, Mikarm LeRuven Shahida, who caused that Reuven should admit his guilt in the changing of the bed of his father with Bilhah? It was Yehuda. It was Yehuda who he admitted his guilt by the story of Tamar. And that was the tradition that they had, that it was Yehuda who admitted his guilt, that inspired Reuven to admit his guilt with Bilhah. Now actually, Rashi brings from the Medrash Agada of Reb Tanchuma, that when Yehuda said, Tzadka mimeni, so Reuven got up and he said, so I was the one that moved our father's bed. And therefore, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, that Yechi Reuven is alive, meaning his body is intact as if he's alive. And V'zois Yehuda, and this is what Yehuda has, meaning his body is rolling around. And he was the whole cause, by his admitting, to have Reuven admit his guilt. So if Reuven's alive and his body's intact, and Yehuda, who he caused Reuven to admit his guilt, his body is rolling around. So Miyad, right away, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda, that Hashem should hear the voice of Yehuda, and Al Avrei L'Shafa. So actually, his limbs went back to the place where they were detached from, meaning they went back into their joints. Now, but Vulohava Kama Island Leila Masifta Dirikia, but Moshe Rabbeinu kept on going higher and higher. Problem is that they didn't let Yehuda come up to the heavenly academy to have a discussion with the other sages regarding the words of Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu continued davening, Vel Amoy Tibayeno, he should be brought to his nation, that he could enter the yeshiva. So then he was entered into the Masifta Dirikia. But he didn't know how to be able to have a discussion and learning with the other rabbis there in the heavenly academy. So he davened Yodav Ravli, that his hand should be great for him, meaning that it should be able to overpower in learning. That's why I use the word Yodav, because that's a term of a war, because it's actually called Macham Teshotar. It's you walk into a yeshiva, you see it's a war. So let him have great might. Now, so therefore, he was able to have a discussion and in learning. But they didn't say that his words are according to the halacha. In other words, he didn't merit to say something that was accepted by the other great chachamim there in the heavenly academy. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu davened ve'ezim mitzar v'tiyah, that he should have help from his adversaries, meaning he should be able to have his words heard and accepted, which is what the word halacha means, to say by the other sages. Now the Gemara says, Bishlam Yehuda de'aydi. So, okay, that's what they told the Safek Saita, and these two people admitted their guilt regarding what they had done wrong. So the Gemara wonders, Bishlam Yehuda de'aydi. We understand why Yehuda admitted his guilt. Kehecha de'lay tisrif Tamar. So that Tamar, his daughter-in-law, shouldn't get burnt, because they were about to kill her for what she was mezana. When they found out that it was Yehuda, he says, oh, it's from me, and she was able to stay alive. Ela Reuven, lamalei de'aydi. Why would Reuven admit his guilt and say, I was the one that did this? Rav Shesha says, Chatzef olai demafrit chatoi. I consider it audacious for someone to specify his sins to many people, because it looks like he's not so embarrassed. Yeah, I did this. Why are you saying? Why would Reuven, what would be the gain for Reuven to admit his guilt? It's not appropriate to let people know, because then it actually diminishes the seemingly inappropriateness of what you had done. So the Gemara says, "Kehicha dolei lechesh to do achuhi," so that his father shouldn't suspect that his brothers had some role in this. So the reason for his admitting it wasn't just to let people know that he's okay with it. It's because he didn't want his father to be suspecting his other brothers. So he admitted and said, it was me. And again, that was a brave act. And that's what we're trying to induce the Saita to go ahead and admit her guilt also. Now, the Mishnah said, Im Amr Tamei Ani Bechuluf, after all that they're intimidating her, she admits and she says, I'm Tamei. So, as the Mishnah said, Sheveres Ksubasa, she writes a receipt of her Ksuba, where she has and when she got married, there was a Ksuba that was written, how much the husband's going to give her if she gets divorced or if she gets widowed. Now, that's obviously her fault that the marriage is ending. She writes a receipt saying that I was Mizana and I don't get anything, and then she leaves. So the Gemara says, seemingly, Shamet Mino, Kais and Shaver. You can infer from our Mishnah that there is a receipt that's written for the Ksuba. In other words, this is a Machlikish of Yehuda and Rabbi Yasi in Baba Bas, Davkof Ainam Abeis, where Yehuda says actually that we don't write receipts. Rather, what we do is we just tear up the Ksuba document. Because if we said that the wife she holds on to the Ksuba, but she just writes a receipt to her husband, well, that's difficult for the husband. Now he's going to have to safeguard the receipt from mice, whatever it is, that shouldn't ruin it, and he's always going to have to be worried, because if something happens to this document, the receipt, then the wife will say, oh, you don't have a receipt, here's my ksuba. You have no proof that you never paid my ksuba, and she could then collect again. So seemingly from our Mishnah, we see not like him, Because we see that that's what the Mishnah says, that she writes a receipt for a ksuba. So Amabai, Abai answers that no, tni mikaras. Actually, you should read in the words of the Mishnah, not sheveres ksubasa, but mikaras, that she actually tears up the document of the ksuba. So there it's like a Yehuda. They don't make her write a ksuba, we write a receipt, we just tear up the ksuba, and then obviously she won't be able to collect her ksuba anymore. Now, that Amalei Rava, Rava asked Abaya, but sheveres ktani. It doesn't say mikaras, it says regarding writing a shaver. So Elam Rava, rather what Rava says, that it shouldn't be difficult for Rabbi Huda, is talking about makom shein kaisim ksuba askinan. We're talking about in a place where they don't write a ksuba. Rather, they rely on what's called tnai bezin. There are certain conditions in the courts when a man gets married to a woman where they instituted that a basula, a virgin, automatically gets 200, and almana gets mana, gets only 100. Now, when she gets divorced, so how does she collect a ksuba? They don't write a ksuba in those areas. So actually what she does is she produces her get, her divorce document, says, look, I was divorced, so give me my ksuba. If we know that she was a basula, she gets 200. If she was a mana, she gets 100. Now, if she gets widowed, there's not even a divorce document, so how does she collect a ksuba? So she actually brings witnesses that testify her husband died, and that's how she collects a ksuba. Now, however, in the halacha of our Mishnah, we're in a place where they don't write a ksuba, since it's not possible. So, yes, meaning it's not possible to tear up the ksuba, which is what Rabbi Huda holds that they normally do. So there, yes, Rabbi Huda would agree to Rabbi Yasi that, like the halacha of our Mishnah, that they would write a receipt. And the reason being is because it's better that he at least has a little proof that he paid up, even though obviously it's going to be challenging for him to have to protect it and make sure nothing happens to it, so that she shouldn't just come along again and bring witnesses that he died in court, and then she's going to continue collecting from his inheritors after she had already collected, because all she has to do is bring witnesses that he died. Because when she's widowed, how else do you expect me? We live in a place where they don't run a ksuba. So I bring witnesses that my husband died, and then I collect my ksuba, but then she's going to go to another court and bring witnesses again. So therefore, it's worthwhile in such a situation, as in the case of the suffix saita, at least let him have, because there's no ksuba to tear up, let him have a shaver, so in case if she wants to do this ploy of going to other courts and just bring witnesses, he'll have the receipt to disprove and say that, look, you already got your ksuba. But again, it's not difficult to contribute Huda. Yes, usually we don't write a shaver, but in the place where they don't write a ksuba, you have no other option, and therefore he would agree, as in halacha of a Mishnah, of shaver's ksubasa, that the saita writes this receipt saying that I was mezana and I lost all the rights to my ksuba.